and Phil as well. I've known both Pat and Phil for a few years now, and thank you. They're a deep inspiration to me, just beautiful, beautiful souls, and yeah, they are just humbled to be on the stage with them. I'm going to go back to when I was born. and I know, it's enlightening this program. The reason why I'm saying that is because I had a bit of a revelation a few weeks ago. Through all of my life, my compulsive overeating, I thought, had stemmed from my mum. She was an alcoholic. She had tried to take her life a couple of times. She was in and out of mental institutions. And I've got vivid memories of her trying to take her life and ambulance people breaking in through the door to go and rescue her. And my dad was... did the best he could, but he shared as much emotion as what a potato does. It was just nothing there. And it wasn't his fault, it's just the conditioning of what everybody has. So my eating through my childhood continued through my whole life, of compulsive eating, of binge eating, of secret eating. All of it was based around trying to support me, to get me through things, but everything was just, all of the eating was just giving me shame. When I was younger, it was fine because I was doing so much exercise, so much sport that it didn't really show. But when I stopped, then the weight just piled on massively as soon as I moved to London. And then I got together with my wife at the time, and we went through many diets, and I was going through so many different diets back and forth, and I was really successful. I could lose weight really easily, but then I would put it back on straight away. And I remember going to a hypnotherapist and talking to her and saying, I wish this food was like alcohol, I wish it was an addiction. I wish I could just stop eating, but it's right up there with oxygen. I sort of need it to get through every day. And it wasn't until I had a breakdown during the credit crunch, and then my relationship with my wife just started to deteriorate rapidly. And I then found the rooms in 2017 through a therapist, and she recommended that I come to OA. And I thought, what's that? It's a 12-step fellowship. What's that? It's like AA, but for food. I was like, oh, right, okay. And went, and the first meeting I went to, it was in North London. It was in a hospital, which would have been one of the ones that my mum would have gone to. So I remember sitting in the car for 20 minutes thinking, what the hell am I doing here? Everyone's going to know me. I'm going to be so embarrassed. HP carried me into that room, and I thought, a bunch of nutters in here. But I just felt at home. The GOD was plastered all over the walls, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get brainwashed into a cult. But the love and compassion and vulnerability saw me through, and there's a couple of people in this room that were there on my first day, and are sort of very dear friends to me. And it took me a while to get my abstinence, but I did, and I was giving a whole heap of service and just absolutely loving life, and had massive physical recovery, massive spiritual recovery, and then complacency set in. Which I really didn't see coming. One of my favourite lines in the book, or sections in the big book, is the whiskey and the milk. And I just thought that that's my red foods. So long as I don't do that, then I'm going to be absolutely fine. And I didn't. But what I didn't really fully appreciate was that whiskey and the milk can mean absolutely anything. And for me, that was the daily activity of my daily act. action, my daily program of action, I'd worked through the steps, I was giving loads of service. It was like, yeah, no, I'm living the dream. And then so when I was going through the steps, went through the steps and I did, came to my step eight and went back to my step four and my ex was on there and my mum and my stepdad were. And when I think about self-discipline, I knew then that I needed to go through that because if I didn't go through that, then I just wouldn't have any forgiveness for them and it would just continue to gnaw away at me. And that was what was gnawing away and that was that wasn't the root cause of why I was eating, but it was just, I knew that I had to deal with it. My mum had died through alcohol-related accident. So the first person I made amends to was my ex. And I know this is step eight, so I need to take it back a bit. When I was going through step eight and just preparing it, I just needed to really understand what making amends was. What was step nine? And for me, it was, I need to be prepared and to put a full stop at the end of I'm sorry and mean it. Because if I didn't, then it would just spiral and come apart. And I remember taking my ex to dinner and I just want to just say sorry for everything that I did. And I could have sort of, in the past I had, because she'd had an affair with this guy for three times. But I had to look at my part in the situation and what drove her to that? And it was, I went through a mental breakdown. I didn't cope with the credit crunch she did, and we just drifted apart. And she needed somebody to support her, and I wasn't there to support her. But to be able just to say sorry was one of the most liberating experiences that I had. As a consequence, I'm going to go on to that in a second, actually. And then I was thinking of my mum and my stepdad and the thoughts I had with my stepdad before coming into recovery and the early parts of recovery, that could I drive down to Salisbury to accidentally drive over him and reverse back over and drive over him again and get away with it? No, there's too many traffic cameras around, damn. During recovery and during this whole process, what was something that really struck me, somebody shared with me, that they were addicts, they were both alcoholics, they had never been or got a 12-step fellowship, and they were just doing the best that they could do, and it was me judging them as to what I thought the best was for a parent or what they should be doing or how they should be treating my half-sister. And the second that penny dropped, it just gave me the hugest amount of love and compassion, just unconditional love and compassion for them, because they were just doing the best that they could do, and that was it. They couldn't do any better. Once I accepted that, my mum became part of my higher power, and it just really helped me on my journey. And with my ex, over the last few years, she's had a really rare disease. There's only two people in the UK have got it, and it's just really annihilated her life expectancy. But during all of it, I was able to, because of the friendship that we had, because of the journey that I've been on through OA and through the recovery, meant that I was able to support her. I moved into her house the old family home for 3 months just to help her through the chemotherapy and be there for the kids. And she's now got a boyfriend and she's come through it, and just it's all completely miraculous. But for me, what was miraculous was that we were able to have that friendship, and I was able to have more of an intimate friendship with her than I had ever done. And I'm just eternally grateful for that. However, through all of that, the complacency had set in, and I really hadn't seen it. Thank you. And during the first year of lockdown, I was absolutely fine. But looking back, I could see things were starting to unravel, because I'd stopped doing my meditation. I'd stopped doing my step 10s. I was going to meetings, but I really wasn't present in the meetings, just really going through the motions. And things just slowly started to unravel. And then in June, July last year, I just knew deep down, and a couple of conversations with my sponsor, that I just wasn't abstinent. I wasn't having my trigger foods, but I just was not abstinent. And as soon as I was honest with me, honest with my sponsor, it was like this liberation. I completely nosedived after that. And I was in relapse for 6 months, but it wasn't until I was on a retreat in between. But I never went away. I just kept on coming back to meetings because I can't unknow what I know. I can't unsee what I see. This is just the most incredible, powerful program. And the fellowship and the love and the support and the safety, the forgiveness, the non-judgment, you can't get it anywhere else. So when I was in this retreat in between Christmas and New Year, and there were two things that that really hit me between the eyes that got me back on track again. The first one was, instead of doing New Year's resolutions, it was what would you like to let go in your life? And I thought, and I knew instantly, I just need to let go of just judging myself, of being my worst critic, of just beating myself up all the time, of just being so hard on myself and just having these levels of, if I'm not perfect, then it means I'm a failure and I'm just not good enough. And I had this imposter syndrome at work, even though I was getting promotions and blah, 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 but it was still that I'm not good enough. So I thought, I just want to let go of that. And then the next question was, what do you want to welcome in to your life? And again, it was just instant. It was, I just want to have love and compassion for myself because I'm always there for other people. I'm always doing things for other people. My kids are they're 18 and 20 now, but they are my everything and I will do anything for them. But it was the classic, I'm in the aeroplane and I'm making sure that every single person in the plane and the next plane have got oxygen masks on apart from me. And I'm just thinking I'm Superman and I can do everything. And what I was doing was just hiding. Thank you. I'll just wrap up on this. Thank you. So that was pivotal and I've been abstinent since the 1st of January and it's just been absolutely critical that I'm just not judging myself and just letting things flow. And if I'm not perfect, that's okay because I'm a human being. And something happened a few weeks ago where it struck me that what was underpinning all of my self-worth was that I just thought I was a mistake. And because my mum and dad had me when they were 18, they weren't married, and I just felt that I was just a drunken shag in a rugby club and wasn't brought into this world with any love. And that just has underpinned my whole psyche, my whole blueprint for all of my life. And I think just having that, coming back to step 8, that I just need to have that love and compassion for me, and I need to be putting myself on top of that list. It's still definitely a work in progress. It's still definitely one day at a time. But I know that this is the track that I'm meant to be on. This is the journey that I'm meant to be on. And I wouldn't give it up for the world. So for me, just thinking about step 8, I just need to be willing to let go of myself and say sorry to myself and say it and mean it and say it with a full stop, so that I can live my best life. Thank you.